This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max. I am thrilled to be joined by a colleague that I'm thrilled to call my colleague. Reg Chapman has just been nothing short of outstanding for us at Channel 4 for the long haul. And most recently, if you missed it this week, he did two reports on what's going on in the city of Minneapolis in terms of gang-related violence. One explaining basically how kids end up in a gang, and the other one, tonight that he did, was how you turn a weapon into a semi-automatic weapon that becomes machine gun-like, and how they're able to access that. Reg, I'm always proud of you, but that work you did this week, because I got to tell you, people need to see this. They need to understand it. And they might not like the way it tastes, this medicine, but they got to know this is reality. This isn't us sensationalizing things for ratings. This is the way it really works. And nobody knows that better than you. And you brought that to the forefront, and you put it in front of people, and you said, okay, this is the real world. And I know you've known that for a long time, but I want to congratulate you on those two pieces of journalism that are so important to our state and our cities right now.
Well, I'm humbled by your words, Mike, because no one works harder than you, and I appreciate that. Coming from you, it's a huge compliment. But it's the 800-pound gorilla in the room.
Yes.
And, a lot of officials don't want to talk about the fact that we have a gang problem in our city, and this highlights of how deep of a gang problem that we do have.
Reg, part of the problem, and I want you to expand on this because you did it the other night wonderfully, is I almost look this as akin to corporate America. What are we competing against? Well, the gangs and the carjackers can make thousands of dollars really easy. How are you going to recruit against that? Tell them to go to school and, hey, you save your money. Explain how this really works on the street and how they're able to recruit these kids 14 and 15 years old.
Well, a lot of the kids see the fast money, and that's what they want. And these carjackings, a lot of these cars, the expensive cars, the ones that are higher end of the ones the kids are targeting, and they get those, and they can get good money for those, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, sometimes $60,000 for these cars. The other cars that they're carjacking, that may be your Toyota Camry or your Nissan Maxima, they get those, and they use those cars in the commission of other crimes, robberies and burglaries and shootings, and then they dump them to get another car to keep going. When you have a 15-year-old kid that can make $20,000 a day for a chopped-up car, for selling parts, how are you going to entice them to go straight and work a job for $15 an hour? That's the issue we're dealing with. And you know, people always say you can't talk about getting rid of crime until you first talk about getting rid of poverty. It's poverty-driven is why we have this issue with our gangs. They're all about who has the most money, who has the most drugs, and they're the ones who are on top.
You know, we had Tyrone Terrell on the other day, someone that you know well as well, and he said it was 9 gangs 25 years ago, and now it's 150 gangs, and a lot of the gangs are really cliques, but there are no rules, and there's no code in the street anymore, because at least when you had fewer gangs, you could define who's turf and who was with who. Explain that a little bit to us, why that matters, and why the more gangs there are, the more disjointed and the more unpredictable and the more potential horrendous crime we have.
Well, Mike, back in 1996, when it was Murderapolis, when we did have the few gangs operating in our cities, you were able to sit down and have a gang summit because there were gang leaders. There were people you could talk to say, okay, why are you doing this? This is why usually gangs had off-limits to elderly, off-limits to women and children. What we have now are offsets of gangs. They're cliques, and they're run by neighborhood kids, and whoever has the most money, drugs, are the ones who run it. Everybody wants to be a leader. There is no leadership. There's no type of foundation to say, okay, this is what we stand for, this is what we don't stand for. These young men that are involved in the cliques, there's no moral compass. They just want their ultimate goal, and whoever's in the way is just collateral damage.
I want to be encouraging, and it's just so discouraging to hear what is reality, and our job is to bring reality to the people, so at least you know what it is that you're working with, what it is that's out there for the people that live in this city or this area. Explain how the recruitment of juveniles has become, I mean, it's a key marketing component.
It really is. This is something I got directly from Minneapolis police and members of the gun unit. When they show up to some of these crimes, some of the drive-by shootings, some of the homicides in the city, they see active older gang members on the scene talking to the younger guys, 13, 14, 15, making sure they get the weapons they need to go retaliate. They only go after these young guys because they know they're not going to get jail time. They know they're not going to go to jail if they're 13 and 14 with a gun. And specifically, since we look at our juvenile detention centers, the one Totem Town in St. Paul and the home in here in Minneapolis, they're closed. There are no beds. So, and these young people know this. That's why they are committing crime after crime. You're finding 15-year-olds with 10 or 15 carjacking cases and never been disciplined. You're finding, 14-year-old girls with 5 and 6 carjacking cases. So it's not just the young men. It's the young women who are being enticed into this world of gang involvement.
Reg Chapman is our guest. He has two reports. Look him up online at WCCO.com if you didn't see him when they ran tonight at 6 and Monday night at 10. Just riveting pieces. One of the things that you did was a ride-along, and in the report that you did, you're approaching Broadway and Lyndale, and this is considered to be kind of the epicenter of where there can be gang violence. How do they manage that, watch that, when they know it's a hot spot?
As far as police?
Yeah.
Well, police know that West Broadway corridor, Lyndale and Broadway, Broadway's the dividing line. Anything south of Broadway belongs to the lows, click. Anything north of Broadway belongs to the highs. They've gotten so familiar, the gun unit has gotten so familiar with these young people, they know these guys. They know when they throw them in jail for a violation, they're going to be right back out, and they're going to see them right there on the strip. They are strategically placed in that area to make sure things don't get totally out of control, but they can't be everywhere at every time. You remember when I did that ride-along, Mike, there were times when I was riding on the north side of Minneapolis, and we were the only car in service, and that was just one officer, me and a photographer. So we couldn't respond to certain things because they didn't want to put us in danger. So we had to wait until another crew would come from a different precinct because there are no cops on the streets in North Minneapolis. And these gang members and clique members know that. They know at any time, at most, there might be 5 officers on the north side in the shift.
Can you please stay on with us through a break? Because we haven't even gotten to the piece you did tonight, which I think is startling, too. Could you have a few more minutes?
Yes, sir. Anything for you, Mike Max.
Reg Chapman, man, the best in the business, and what he's been able to do to bring you the reality of what's really going on the streets, not just theory, not just what you want it to be, but what's really going on out there is riveting. More with him, including how they take a weapon and turn it into an automatic weapon next. Welcome back. Joined by Reg Chapman, my colleague at WCCO-TV. He did two great pieces on what's going on in the city this week on WCCO-TV. One dealing with the gangs, how they're formed, how they're recruited. The other one tonight about how they convert weaponry from a standard pistol into machine gun, in essence, by changing the clips. Reg, tell me, explain first of all what they do and how they do it.
It's called an auto sears, or commonly known as switches on the street, and it's a metal device that you can get. You're not supposed to get it; they're unauthorized unless you're a dealer. But they're getting on the black market, and it alters a gun and changes it from firing as a semi-automatic weapon to an automatic weapon. So just like a 9mm pistol, you pull the trigger once, a bullet comes out. You pull the trigger again, a bullet comes out. When they put the switch on there, the bullets, you pull the trigger, it continuously fires until you lift off the trigger. You can fire off 30 shots in 3 seconds. That's what we're hearing across the city now, because a lot of these gang members have had access to these auto sears or switches. And what's even crazy now is that police are telling us that there are even 3D printing them. They're plastic and not as durable as the metal ones that you get in the black market, but that's why you see so many of them, because they're using 3D printing to print these things and pass them out among clique and gang members.
But you know, Reg, when you say that, I mean, if they corner you, you have no chance. If they decide to spray into a crowd, it's horrific, because they're in essence shooting a machine gun.
And they call that collateral damage. The gang member we talked to said that if their rival gang member that they're after is in the store with their mother, whoever's in the way of that automatic weapon is going down. They don't care. They use it to, like I said, to take care of their ops or their rivals. And as you see, they're shooting at funerals. They're shooting at funeral homes. They're shooting at repasses. They've even shot in churches. So it's, the moral compass is off. There are no boundaries, and these auto sears, or these switches, have police concerned, because it's not even summer yet, and we're already, you know, on record pace again for homicides and shootings. And what happens when it really gets warm and we talk about these switches in the hands of gunmen, gang members?
Reg, I've been doing some things the last couple of days that I never thought that I can't imagine that this would have ever been in my top of mind. As the trial goes on for the three officers in the George Floyd case over in St. Paul, you know what I'm looking at first? I'm looking at the weather reports, and I'm trying to figure out if the jury comes to a conclusion, or you know, whatever it is, that may incite some kind of a protest, riot, whatever it is. And right now I'm feeling like the only defense we've got is a cold, frigid day to keep people inside so that they won't be so motivated. I never thought I'd look at that. You probably do too, huh?
Yeah, definitely. You hope that it's if the verdict comes back and it's not favorable for what people or activists want, that you pray for a below 20-degree day.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but I feel like that's our best defense right now.
Thank God for Minnesota winters, but we're just hoping that, you know, all calm heads prevail. I think we've been through this enough through the first George Floyd trial, as well as the Dante Wright trial, to this federal trial, that maybe cooler heads are prevailing and people are doing other things legislatively instead of marching in the streets.
The gang person that you talk to gives you what picture of the future in Minnesota in terms of gangs?
He believes a lot of the young people who are involved in the gangs don't want to be. It's the end all to be all. They can't find jobs. There are no opportunities. There are very little opportunities for them. But some of these young people I've talked to that are involved in these cliques, Mike, they're super smart. They're geniuses.
They can
figure anything out. They're computer heads. They're artists, spoken word artists, painters, some photographers, some videographers. I mean, these guys are talented. And if we can just find a way to take that talent and to put it in a positive direction, then we'd be all good. But until that happens, until those resources are poured into the communities where this is affecting people, it's not going to change anything.
Okay, so let's take DeShawn Hill, who you know, my God, I was driving back from the university yesterday, and I was going to take a shortcut, and the next thing I knew, I was by North Central University, and I forgot the funeral was going on, and it was just room for pause on this terrible blizzard day, and these vehicles are, you know, there's not enough parking to sustain what they want for the service, and he's this, you know, incredible kid on the north side of Minneapolis that you know, a great athlete, by all counts, a great friend, all those things, and he's murdered, in, I mean, he's executed, for crying out loud. Tell me what effect that has on the north side as you see it, when it becomes front and center, and it's not gang versus gang, and it's not a police shooting, it's just purely a high-profile innocent kid. How does that resonate over there? What steps do people take after something like that?
Our young people are living in fear. They're afraid to be young. Most people who knew D. Hill were extremely proud of him. This young man was a shining light. He was the next big thing to come out of the North Side. This kid was polite. He was smart. He told his mom that, you know, if this football thing doesn't work out for me, I'm going to be an engineer. And he had the grades to do it. He was looked up to by so many young people because he did everything right. And because he did and was cut down so violently, so senselessly, it has our young people frightened and their parents in even a bigger uproar. You talked about the crowd at that funeral the other day, and that was because Northsiders take care of Northsiders. They had to show up in that blizzard to be there. And when I was in the vestibule of the sanctuary, there was very little talking. People were so hurt, they couldn't find words, but just the presence, the hugs, the touches, walking by, touching the fellow Northsider to know that we're here. I don't know what much I can do, but we can be here together, and we can get through this together.
Reg, do you ever personally, and do you worry about another effect in the form of PTSD for yourself and others, because you've seen so much for so long, and so have they?
Definitely. I know that our young people are suffering from PTSD. I know their parents or guardians are doing the same. There aren't enough mental health counselors to go around, especially of color. You find different coaches. Thank God for the coaches and the ministers in this community, from Bishop Howell to Pastor Herring. These guys are opening up their churches and allowing the community to come to heal, because it is traumatic. And from someone who's been to war and who understands what PTSD is, I can look in the faces of fellow Northsiders and know they're suffering from the same thing that a soldier or Marine or airman does who's gone to combat.
What's worse right now, what they've seen or the fact that they don't know when this ends?
The unknown, exactly. What they've seen does impact them, but just the uncertainty of every day. I mean, it's almost every day there's a new black body, either on the North Side or the South Side. And so that causes an alarm in almost everybody who has to do business in these areas of town. Just because you don't know what's going to happen next. And that's the biggest fear. I think people are concerned about what's going to happen next, more so than what they've seen in the past.
Now today they found, they arrested someone, a 19-year-old, in the shooting of this 10-year-old that was on a trampoline, and it's taken a long time. That happened last May. Explain to people why it took that long to find out. You know, they say, you know, the streets keep secrets. Why would that secret be kept for so long?
Well, see, that's hard to say. I know a lot of people have been pressing people to know, because there are witnesses to these crimes. There are people who know things. And sometimes it takes a while for someone's heart to melt, for someone to say enough is enough. And during that time, that precious little child was one of three that were shot in the head, you know, in a certain neighborhood amongst, you know, days apart. So I think it just took a while for those tips to call in, for people to say, this is, we got to get these people off the street. We got to get them off the street. So that's why it took so hard. But plus, our homicide detectives, Minneapolis police, are working overtime. These guys are few in number, but mighty in spirit. And they're doing the best they can, but they always say they can't do it alone. So this time, I believe it was community that helped these detectives find their person.
Last question for you, Reg, as we peer ahead. We know we're short on police officers and investigators based on the amount of crimes that we've had. What can be, do you think recruitment of police is critical? Are we going to have to bring in the National Guard more? Is there anything that can be done over the next year to quell this storm?
I think we need homegrown officers. We need officers to come out of the ashes of these communities where there's so much violence. We need little black, brown, red, yellow, whatever color, kids to grow up to want to be law enforcement, to want to patrol their own communities, to want to be that active voice in helping community grow and strengthening community and police relations. Until that time, until we can get those young people interested in law enforcement, we might have to rely on our law enforcement partners, from the sheriff's department, to even the National Guard. I mean, it is what it is. We're going to do what we got to do to keep the residents of the city safe, but all while trying to solve the problem, not enough officers, and doing that from a community standpoint, the community picking the officers they want to patrol their streets.
Reg, keep doing what you're doing, and I know it's heavy lifting, buddy. Proud to call you a colleague, and I mean, we are so freaking lucky to have you on our staff over here and to be able to really give people what's really going on there. And it ain't make-believe, folks. This isn't theatrics, but to have you and your sources and your contacts and your ability to put it in layman's terms is... We are very lucky, and all of us at Channel 4 are thrilled, at least through this, to be able to call you a colleague. So thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you. I'm blessed to work with such an incredible news team, including yourself. You guys, we are family, and what you see on the air is true. We're tighter than tight, and we're going to do the best we can for our community.
Yeah, especially now. Thanks, Reg. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
That's the way it really is, folks. And sometimes I hate giving it to you, but... Reg has seen it more than I, and he knows more than any of the other reporters in town. Wow. When we come back, why would you play basketball if you knew you were going to lose almost every game by 20 points? We'll ask the coach of a local team that does just that when we come back. Stay with us. I'm fascinated by this story because I think in the midst of the way we compete and how hard we compete and all those things, sometimes a deep breath is necessary, and sometimes... a high school team can point that out to you. I went to the Hmong Academy because I kind of followed from afar this girls' basketball team, and I go, my God, they're getting beat bad all the time. And I'm going, why do they do this? Who plays on this team, and why do they play on this team? And what I found was truly compelling story that I'll bring you Friday night on WCCO TV, but it can be narrated by their head coach, Brent Ness, who joins us now. Coach, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You and I have talked about this a couple of times. We've been out at your building a couple of different times, and I say to you as the coach, I say, how do you get kids to play when they know that they're going to get beat by 20 or 30 most nights? And then I talked to some of the players, and I found this just kind of fascinating. Explain who these kids are that play for you and why they play.
So our school serves a lot of second and third generation and some first generation immigrants. So basketball is not necessarily in the blood, especially for the girls program. So our varsity team, we've got three players who played before COVID and a dozen players who have never played competitive basketball a day in their life. And that's kind of been just an ongoing thing. It's a revolving door of people coming out their junior, sophomore, senior year, having never played before.
And why do they want to go out?
You know, I've got to give a lot of credit to the girls. Like, we've set this standard of just having a good time out there. Like, we don't get down on ourselves. And I think that draws people in, that they can come onto the team. It's opening. It's welcoming, no matter what your skill level, to get out there. And then the word just kind of starts spreading.
And so they come out, and the expectations are relatively low in terms of wins and losses. How do they proceed from a competitive standpoint then? Do they say we're going to have some fun, we're going to bond, we're going to try to learn the game? Do they want to just know how to play basketball? What is it they want?
I would say the knowing how to play basketball ranks pretty low on what they're looking for. They're looking to make friends. They're looking to get out there. They are competitive. The score might not be competitive, but when we're out on the court, we are setting goals. And that might be, you know, let's score 20 points. Let's close this, you know, gap. Let's hold them for a couple possessions. So we have to set small goals that aren't necessarily winning the game. And when that goal is set, and they are very competitive to do that. But like I said, we definitely have to adjust what we're shooting for. And then, you know, when you achieve those little goals, it hits home. Like, we have lost games and walked off the court in a better mood than the team that beat us because we hit that 20 points. And maybe we lost by 40, but we got the 20 points that we set out there to get.
The other piece of it that I find to be redeeming and interesting and important is that the connection that they form amongst each other, basketball simply provides a platform because they end up in the same place at the same time. They may not be in the same neighborhood where they live, but basketball connects them, and it leads to foundationally some friendships that they just would not have without it.
Absolutely. At a charter school, you know, we don't pull from a local neighborhood. We're pulling from the entire metro area. And then we actually co-op with Agriculture Food Science Academy. So we've got a couple girls coming over from there. And this is our first year with a co-op. And it made me a little nervous bringing in some people that I didn't know. But I shouldn't have been nervous. The friendships, the welcoming attitude that they have. And you and I talked about it earlier today, too. It goes beyond that. It goes to the other teams that we play. We played Hiawatha Academy, kind of our rival school. They're very, very similar population over there. They beat us on a buzzer beater, and instead of moping off the court, our girls actually went over there and exchanged Snapchat information with them.
That's what they said.
We're making friends everywhere. It's really interesting for me, too, because that's not what I come from. I come from, you know, a very competitive. You know, when you lose like that, that's going to stick with you for days at a time. And if, you know, it's so cliche to say you learn something from the students or from the players, but 100%. Like, I have learned to be a more gracious, I don't want to say loser, but a more gracious competitor, I guess, and leave the losses on the court when you're done, and you move on to the next thing.
Brent Ness is our guest head coach of the Hmong Academy girls basketball team. They've won just one game this season. And yet the players that I talk to, I say, explain, how would you explain this season? Now, we all know what would be conventional for most of us to say, well, it's been a tough year, and, you know, or the bounces didn't go away, whatever. And they say to a person, they say, oh, it's been great. It's been so much fun. And I think, yep. God, I wish I could get there, because there's the victory in sports, right? That's what sports are about, really. That's why we offer them at high school, because it's almost like another class on life. And to hear them say that without hesitation, because they have so moved the priorities of winning versus the priorities of experience, I wish they'd stand up in front of everybody on the stage, because it really, you know, I know everybody says, well, everybody gets a ribbon, I don't like the ball, but this is foundationally why we do this, isn't it?
100%. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It is why we do it, and it's why we play sports too. I mean, a lot of these girls, you know, they're maybe more competitive when they play volleyball or when they play badminton. But just the fact that they're willing to take that risk, and that's one of the things we talk about with them and all of our students at our school, is like taking those good risks. You know, it's scary to go to college. It's scary to, you know, go away and do all that stuff. And there's good risks, and taking those things can have such big payoffs. And I think most of our girls would agree that taking that risk to come out to basketball, you know, I'm hoping that it really paid off for all of them.
Leaving their comfort zone is what they talk about, isn't it?
Yep.
And you embarrass yourself, but you know what? At the end of it, they say, I said, what would you tell a freshman that's thinking about going out? And they gave the reasons as to why they should go out, and it had nothing to do with winning and losing or scoring points. And I thought, isn't that awesome? And sometimes it takes kids to teach us, but I mean, isn't that awesome that the reasons they gave were like, man, get out here, find out about yourself, you'll meet these people, and all of a sudden you have friendships in the hallways, and these people that you go to school with become your friends, and now, you know, guess what, you got people you can lean on for your personal life because you shared a mm-hmm. basketball court with them, and I'm sure you've seen this repeated time and time again.
Yeah, and, you know, not to make it a bigger story than it needs to be, but it kind of goes back to your previous segment where you're talking about, you know, people getting out and finding negative influences, having that opportunity for positive influences inside the school, whether it's sports or, you know, we've started a bass fishing club and an esports club, having those things that, you know, a kid can find a home inside the school and make those connections, those positive connections that they can lean on for now and in the future.
Brent Ness, our guest, and Brent, as a coach, don't you find that everybody wants to be a part of a team, and you just got to be real careful what team you select, because the team can be a gang, the team can be a bad yep. influence, but everybody wants to be on a team, it seems to me.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that, and as much as I don't understand esports, and bass fishing's not my thing, yeah. You know, if that is your thing, then let's get them a part of that team.
Yeah, whatever connects you and whatever makes you a better person and gives you self-esteem is the big one. Well, Brent, thank you very much for sharing with us. And it was fun to get to know you and a couple of the players out there. But keep doing what you're doing.
Hey, thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure. I was glad to see you come and check out some of these other schools out there. We definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. It's fun to me because if we're really doing our job, it's not just about covering the headliners, and sometimes the best stories are found elsewhere. Brent Ness, head coach. We'll be signing on Friday night on our high school sports rally on WCCO-TV that, we shot the game. We did the interviews with the kids. You'll see what I mean. It's certainly not about quality. In terms of play, but it's about quality in terms of relationships and experience. When we come back, Tubbsy throws that around, the reason that he got into sports. Stay with us. Tubbsy, did you ever play on a team that wasn't very good and you had a great time?
Yes. Yeah, I played on a lot of teams that were not very good because I wasn't very... No, I'm just kidding. I played on teams where you realize that maybe it's not going to be... You know, you're not going to be in a lot of those games, but you learn that you're just doing it because you want to be around your friends, and it's the camaraderie.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where, you know, you can always win if you choose to win, I guess is what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mindset. It's about the power of positivity. You know, it is... You can make your environment what you want it to be based on your attitude. I really believe that.
And there's an old saying, you either win or you learn. I mean, if you look at it that way, hey, I learned.
Mm-hmm.
There's always something that gets you better.
Yeah. I mean, every day is an opportunity to improve yourself in some way, shape, or form. No day is ever going to be wasted. As long as you are able to get up and you know, get yourself out of bed and you take your breaths and open your eyes, then you have an opportunity to learn something that day.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. How bothered are you that we're not talking about baseball yet?
I'm bothered by it, Maxie. I hear more negativity about it now, you know, about, okay, well, you know, if you don't have an agreement by February 28th, and, you know, spring training, you know, is completely off the table. Regular season games are going to get canceled. Players aren't going to get paid. You know, and, you know, none of these games are going to be made up. And I'm like, we just went through this with COVID. And I think I mentioned this to you, I think like last week or something. It's like, how can you not figure this out? Your one job is to figure out how to get the players on the field, how to get your game. What is more important for the, you know, Major League Baseball Players Association and Major League Baseball than getting games that are played between the lines? What is more important? Is it really worth all of the complaining and the moaning and groaning back and forth and the bickering? It's like, I just don't understand why you can't get something done.
I mean, I agree. I don't, you know, nobody's losing in this deal. Whatever the deal is, everybody wins big, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I'm not going to get into the millionaires versus billionaires thing because, you know, it's been done to death.
Well documented.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, it's such a cliche when you hear that. But to me, I'm more upset that they don't see the damage that they're doing. And these are both sides. I understand that people put more onus on the owners because of the lockout, not a strike. I understand that. But to me, I feel like both sides need to be more aggressive at the bargaining table. And if you have to sit there for 15 hours a day, sit there for 15 hours a day, but figure it out.
Figure it out and let's get on with our lives, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think Major League Baseball kind of is in a position where they have to be careful because they are America's national pastime in name only. Like, people are – you lose fans at this point, Maxie, you're not going to get some of those people back. I mean, you know, they've had – you know, they had Maguire, Sosa in 98. You don't have something to bring the casual fan back like you did back then. Like, you don't have something
– wonder what that would be as you look at baseball right
Oof,
now. You're saying,
I don't know. Bring it, yeah.
And I'm not saying it's dead because otherwise you wouldn't be arguing over billions of dollars. So obviously it's alive and well.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I wonder, you know, you always look at what would be, you know, the NFL to an extent got through COVID because Tom Brady went to Tampa and won a Super Bowl, you know?
Yeah.
And then this year they had, you know, just some outstanding playoff games that led to the Super Bowl, which was also, you know, down to the wire.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder what it would take in baseball. What would people be looking for, you know?
I don't know. I don't think baseball right now, the health of the game itself, is in a very good position.
But it's relatively speaking. I mean, they're all making billions. And this MLB.com, they tell me, is off the charts.
Yeah. And
profitability-wise.
I mean, yeah. I mean, in terms of what, you know, players, what would Major League Baseball need to do to, you know, to bring back those fans? Like, the game, to me, it's way too damn long, number one.
But, well, you know what's funny about that, though? Nobody will talk about this.
Yeah.
You can shorten it up. Just do less ads. Oh, wait, less commercials. Oh, wait, no. That's, don't want to do that.
No, that's the lifeblood. That's the lifeblood.
You know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah, no, there is. I mean, there's, you know, there's pace of play. There's
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
There's lots of activity on a soccer field, fewer breaks, mm-hmm. and yet there's very few goals scored. Can you capture a mass audience if you don't score more goals?
I think you can. But because, I mean, there's got to be constant movement with at least in soccer, you always have that movement. And I love – baseball was my sport growing up. Like, I
played
it. You
used to chuck it a little bit from the hill?
I did, yeah. I mean, I played 6 days a week, and I played slow-pitch softball, like, at night. I mean, I was all over it. But, I mean, right now it's just – it doesn't hold your attention because – The game itself, it's either strikeout or a home run. There's just not much action in terms of ball being hit in play, hit and run.
But is that the answer to the next generation is strikeout or home run, because that's what they can relate to?
Yeah, and I think it's all about the way that kids are being taught. What they see, you know, it could be the Steve Balboni, Rob Deere, we're going to hit 214 with 35, 40 home runs. I mean, that's what passes for, you know, quality baseball, you know, nowadays. I mean, there's no Mattinglys, there's no Boggs, there's no George Brett's, there's no guys that are hitting 375, 380. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I just sound like an old fuddy-duddy.
Get him on, get him over, get him in, he's gone.
Yes. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It just seems like...
Is that just smart? I mean, is that just smart for managers to recognize and go, look, we got these guys 220 pounds. Mm-hmm. I'm not screwing around bunting and stealing. Let them swing hard, and at the end of the game, we win.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, though, that you know, I mean, would you rather watch a guy like Miguel Sano take, you know, 5 at-bats a game, or do you want somebody... You know, like a Wade Boggs or a Joe Mauer. You know, would you rather watch Mauer didn't have a whole lot of power?
And then people would say, well, why didn't he swing in the first pitch? Remember that?
Yeah, you know, Mauer wasn't comfortable until he had 2 strikes on him.
Yeah, that's pretty confident is what that is.
You know, I don't know. I think it's just the way that the game is played. And again, I sound like an old fuddy-duddy, and I don't mean to, but MLB's flawed, and I think they're overstating their importance to the casual sports fan at this point.
Okay, so Steve Thompson's in for Henry Lake coming up next. Do you know what's on his docket?
I don't know what's on his docket.
They keep that secret now, don't they?
Yeah.
I see that file, and I went over to look at it once. He says, don't touch that.
I know. They don't let me spoil things. It's kind of a surprise, I guess.
Yeah, I know. And now they got in a wall safe over there.
Yeah.
We don't know, but all we're going to say is it's going to be good, right?
It's going to be good because it's going to be Stevie T and Hammer tonight.
All right, very good. Good to be with you, my friend.
You too, Maxie.
That's Tubbsy. I'm Mike Max. Steve Thompson's coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
With TikTok ads, we went from 250,000 downloads to over 1 million downloads in less than a year.
I'm Eve. I'm Anam, and we're the co-founders of Alinea.
Alinea Invest is an investing app for Gen Z.
We run 50 new ads per week with 3 variations thanks to TikTok Smart Plus campaigns. If you're not advertising on TikTok, you're missing out.
Drive more app downloads only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.